Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with Director Alan Paul, who is directing Spring Awakening at Roundhouse Theater now through February 23rd. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. So when did you first encounter the show? I know it won like 8 Tonys. Did you actually catch it on Broadway, or when was your first personal experience with it?
Well, when it was on Broadway in 2006, I was in college, and a friend of mine saw it and loved it, and I didn't get a chance to see it, though, until it came to the Kennedy Center on the national tour. So that my first experience was at the Opera House at the Kennedy Center, probably 2008.
Wow. And memories, you know, try to put yourself back in, sitting in that Opera House, seeing it for the first time, you know, paint me a visual picture.
Oh, my God. Teenage angst. I wasn't long from being a teenager, and so everything that the show is about was, you know, so fresh to me. And also, as a young person that, you know, was a theater nerd, the original production was so innovative, and the choreography and the way it looked, it was like nothing I'd ever seen. It like blew my mind open.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about also that show launched a bunch of people. You know, you had Jonathan Groff going to do Hamilton. You had Lea Michele went on to do Glee. Because Glee was after Spring Awakening, yeah.
Every single person in that original went on to, like, major, major stuff, including there was one gentleman in the ensemble who just was the lead a year ago in How to Succeed at the Kennedy Center. And so it really launched everyone into being big stars. And they were all like 17 or 18. They were so young then. That was a testament to that original and to, you know, finding great people.
Absolutely. And I think just to put a pin in that, I think Skylar Austin went on and did Pitch Perfect. And I mean, man,
yeah, that's
John,
the guy, yeah.
John Gallagher Jr. too went on. Did,
oh, my God,
American
the Aaron Sorkin show that I love. Yeah, and American Idiot.
Yeah, man,
everyone.
It was stacked. All right.
So maybe we'll be launching a lot of new stars from Bethesda.
Yeah, take me into some of those. Who all we got? Run through the cast a little bit here. Who is your future stars here?
Well, I think all three of the leads are future stars. Evan Daves plays Melchior. Sean Watkinson plays Moritz, and Christina Sastre plays Vendla. And I think the amazing thing about this company is it is like the most beautiful, interesting, quirky group of young people I've seen. And we worked really hard to keep it young. So there's one woman in the ensemble is still a senior in college. She's a senior at Howard. So there are a lot of young talents on stage. And it's interesting, you know, Spring Awakening has meant so much to them too. So you see it when they're singing and dancing and they know every single word of the show before the first rehearsal, and you realize you're a part of like an iconic experience of theater for young people. And,
awesome.
You know, the show is about an ensemble. I mean, it's a rich ensemble show, and no one will get a star bow in this one, like in the original. So it is about the texture of all of those people and all those bodies on stage.
Awesome. Before we get too much further in, why don't we take one quick step back, and why don't you remind us what the premise is here? Because, you know, you and I know what it is, but let's say someone listening to the TOP I'm sure everyone's heard the title, Spring Awakening, but maybe they don't know what the plot is. So just give them a quick setup here.
Spring Awakening is a musical set in 1891 about a group of young German students who are discovering their sexuality and growing into adulthood. And they are met with resistance from parents and adults who refuse to teach them about it. And so it's about what happens to this group of people as they journey into adulthood. And what's so interesting about the piece is that the scenes are realistic, but when the kids sing, we are thrust into a world of their fantasies and desires, and they're allowed to sing everything that they can't say in real life. And so it's got an amazing rock score, and it's about the juxtaposition of 1891 versus the sensibility of today.
Awesome. And how does that, that was great. I want to get into that rock score in a minute, because it's rock, you know, rock music.
Amazing.
But first, I want to unpack something else you said, which is how it's sort of juxtaposed with, you know, their 1890s, you know, Germany, you know, their real world as teenagers, with the fantasy world of their hopes and dreams. How's that? How do you, as the director, visually bring that to life? Like, how do you make that a visual juxtaposition as well? I'm sure the stage or you know, set pieces or the costumes must change along with the whether you're in reality or fantasy.
Well, the set is really interesting, and it's done by a designer named Adam Rigg, who is one of the most important designers off-Broadway right now. And when you walk into the theater, you will see a giant full-stage picture of an Adam and Eve scene and about innocence and about the rigidity of the past and the beauty of the past. And then every time they go into their fantasy and song, the stage becomes full of neon lights. And so you see their desires in neon color. And I don't want to give away the surprises of the show, but some big changes happen to the scenery as the play goes on that reflect the inner state of the lead performers. So it's
sure.
going to look quite different than every other production of Spring Awakening I've seen. It's going to be very visually different, which is exciting for me as a director.
Absolutely. And then in terms of the aforementioned, the rock musical, it's a rock musical, which we always love, but it's Duncan Sheik, who everyone remembers, you know, the Barely
Oh my God, yeah.
From the 90s. We grew up with that. But I mean, talk about, you know, when you hear, you know, it's like a singer-songwriter, you know, who you've maybe heard on the radio, you don't necessarily think of them pivoting to do an iconic, you know, show tune musical is what a lot of people think with Broadway. But talk about just why he was the perfect person to kind of make that pivot.
Well, the music in this show is so gorgeous and so detailed, and it's orchestrated so incredibly. And he is able to find both this, it is a rock score, so he's able to have rock songs, but they're done in a way that tell a story that fits into a theatrical piece. And there's incredible singing. It's very, very interesting, plain singing. And there's also incredible, incredible harmony throughout the show. One of the things that we tested every singer in at auditions was, were they able to harmonize? And that's the richness of this experience. And it's like no other music I've heard. He is a man of the theater. And these are incredible voices that we've got at Roundhouse. A lot of them are from the community, and then a lot of the performers we brought in from New York. So I'm eager for you to hear the show as much as I am for you to see it.
Awesome. Remind us some of the famous musical numbers that came out of this one, because, you know, when something comes and, you know, sweeps the Tonys like it did in 06, and then, oh, I think it was revived too in a couple years ago. When something does that, musical theater students around the country, it becomes part of their lexicon. So remind us some of the numbers.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's the amazing number, the fourth one in the show called The Bitch of Living. There's the one that everyone knows, Mama Who Bore Me. And then there's one I cannot fully say on the air, which is called Totally F You, star, 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 star.
Totally.
Actually, I think I left out a final star.
There's stars in there.
Yeah, parental guidance.
you're going in there, a curse word, and you're coming out a star.
Exactly.
42nd Street. All right, cool. Well, Do you have a personal favorite number, Night In, Night Out? Maybe I do. One in there.
Nothing's underrated, but there's a song called Touch Me that's beautiful on its own. But the other thing I want to say is I've been lucky to work with an extraordinary choreographer named Paul McGill, who has done an amazing dance for Touch Me. But his dances throughout the show are so unlike anything I've ever seen for Spring Awakening. They're so personal. They're a mix of what feels like modern dance and also theater dance. And I can't describe them. You just sort of have to see them. But I think part of the richness of the experience of this Spring Awakening will be the way people move. And I think that's going to be one of the most memorable parts of the evening and quite different from anything I've seen on the stage in D.C.
And he's pulling, I think, right? He's pulling from original choreography by Bill P. Jones, right? He's a legend. We interviewed him a couple years ago when he was honored at the National Portrait Gallery.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not pulling
from Bill
P. Jones.
He makes it his own, right?
Yeah, he's not. We're not doing any steps from Bill T. Jones. It's entirely original. But I think what you're alluding to, which I think is true, is that what was so memorable about the first Spring Awakening was Bill T. Jones's choreography. And so it's a chance for full expression of the body in a very different way than you would see in a traditional musical. So, I mean, it is connected to Martha Graham and modern dance in a really exciting way.
Awesome. Now, I know you mentioned, you know, some of the local actors that you insist they're going to become stars, but take me a little more into the, you know, those three, the characters they play. You know, who are these three teens? And, you know, just give me a breakdown one by one. Like, what are some of the issues each of those teens is grappling with?
Yeah, Melchior is the main character, and he is a young man. He's sort of like a young revolutionary, and he is struggling against an oppressive system that he feels he can change, that's very prude about sexuality, a group of teachers who are unfair to him. And his best friend is Moritz, who is, to put it mildly, a problem child. And he has a lot of emotional difficulties, and the world becomes too much for him. And he is a tragic example in this show of what it means to die by suicide, which he does in the second act of the play. Mm-hmm. And it's also the story of a society around him that doesn't know how to help him and doesn't understand the depth of what he's going through. And then there is Wendla, who falls in love with Melchior, who is a young, innocent woman who doesn't know anything about sex and finds out too late the consequences of what happens when you have sex. And she is a victim of a society of adults who arm her with zero information that can help her in her journey through life. So it's a tragedy in a way about what happens when there is a breakdown between adults and young people. And,
is that because the adults just treat it as taboo, or, you know, explain what the breakdown, what causes the breakdown?
Yeah, well, the adults in this version are so afraid to have a frank conversation about mental health or sexuality that the children in this piece are left to their own devices. And it's also, there are two adult actors in this play, Bobby Smith and Tanya Beckman, who play every single set of adults in the course of the play. And they represent adulthood in general. So it's a play that's commenting about how adults at that time did very little to help and were quite afraid to help young people.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit more about yourself. And if anyone listening to this hears the name, you know, director Alan Paul, they're going to know that, you know, they're going to remember, what was it, Camelot at Olney, the Peter Pan and Wendy at Shakespeare. I mean, they're going to know your name. But remind them how you got started. But, you know, how'd you get bit by the theater bug, you know, back growing up?
I got bit by the theater bug at the Lisner Auditorium when I was 5 years old, seeing The Wizard of Oz. And Dorothy looked at me, and I've always remembered that. And I'm actually from Potomac, Maryland, so I grew up here. I grew up going to the Shakespeare Theater. So I promised myself I would never move back to the D.C. area. And when I was 21, Michael Kahn, the former artistic director of the Shakespeare Theater Company, hired me to be an intern, and that was 14 years ago. So I've stayed in my DC theater.
You said move back to the DC area. Where were you before? Did you go to New York for a while?
I went to Northwestern University to be what I thought would be an actor. And I realized my senior year I was too bossy to be an actor, and I decided I would be a director. And then I came back here to do an internship, and I stayed.
That's awesome. What? Why do you think directing wound up being your better? Not even say better, because it's different for each person, right? Maybe someone might have gone to Northwestern to be a director and found out they wanted to be an actor. It could be different for each person, but why for you personally? Do you think that was your actual, you know, your gift, that your reason you were put on the planet?
Well, I think that you know, to be an actor, you have to turn off the part of your brain that sees the big picture. You have to be so focused on what you're going through. And I was never good at that. I wanted to control everything. I had an opinion about how to tell a story clearly. I knew what I thought the experience should be. In fact, when I was a senior, the last play I acted in, I really didn't like what the director was doing, and I felt I could change it and fix it in 3 days. And I thought, that is the most unhelpful feeling to have as an actor, because you're not in control. So I thought, well, I better just be a director. It was the path of least resistance. I have a stack of like 1,000 headshots I had printed when I was 21, and I think I used 10 of them. So that goes to show you what kind of an actor I was.
I love it. All right. Well, you've directed a bunch of shows all around town. But what, you know, dote on Roundhouse for a second. What makes that such a special place to, you know, work creatively?
Well, it's special for two reasons to me. Number one, because I'm from Potomac, Maryland, I grew up 15 minutes away from it, and I saw everything there, including, believe it or not, Lea Michele in The Diary of Anne Frank, directed by a mentor to me, Rebecca Taishman, who won the Tony last year for Indecent on Broadway.
Wow.
So I have a real personal connection to it. But I would also say it's one of the most exciting theaters in the D.C. area, because they're doing contemporary work in a really exciting way. And the word of mouth on this theater is incredible. I mean, people talk about the work at Roundhouse so much. So when Ryan Rolette, the theater's artistic director, asked me to come and do a musical, I was like, I'm 100% in. And I knew it would be quality. So I can't wait to be there. We moved to the theater tomorrow. We've been in the rehearsal hall, and I'm over the moon.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to see it. Again, I know it starts on the 22nd, so it's only about a week away, so we're excited.
Oh, my God, it is.
I didn't mean that to scare you.
No, it's
a lot
of work to do in a week. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, you'll knock it out. Awesome. Well, just sort of in closing, you know, if our listeners have been listening to this, why should they come on out? You know, maybe they saw Spring Awakening, you know, on Broadway and are huge fans and just can't wait to see your guys' take on it. Or maybe they've never seen it, you know, regardless of what camp they're in, why should they come on out?
Well, whether you've seen it before or you've never seen it, I think it's one of the most incredible modern pieces of musical theater. And you will see it done in a way you haven't seen before, both in the way it looks visually and the choreography and in the interpretation. It is a story about 1891, but it's also a story about today. And it's a story about intergenerational issues. So I think young people and everyone else, come to the theater. You'll have a great night.
Awesome. Again, everyone, that's director Alan Paul, who's directing Spring Awakening at Roundhouse Theater, January 22nd through February 23rd. So get your tickets now. Hey, thanks, Alan. You were great.
Okay, great. Thank you. Bye.